Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinsel. Well, both the Vermont Republican and Democratic parties will hold their state conventions this weekend. Delegates will be elected to serve at the national conventions this summer. And each party will also draft its platform to inform voters about its priority issues for the upcoming statewide and legislative campaigns. Today on Vermont Edition, we're going to explore how this process works and why it's important. And we're going to start with the issues at the Democratic State Convention that will be held Sunday at the Berry Opera House. And joining us now to talk about the work of that convention is Connor Casey, who is the executive director of the Vermont Democratic Party. Connor, great to have you here.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having me.
And you can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Maybe you have some questions about how this whole state convention process works, how delegates are elected to the national convention. Do they campaign for those slots? Democrats also use a system called non-elected superdelegates to their national convention. Should this system be changed? Looks like that'll be debated at the state convention on Sunday. Your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. So let's start off with the idea that, I mean, you're expecting a bunch of people to come to the Berry Opera House. Several hundred people coming?
It's going to be a capacity crowd. We're looking at 600 state delegates who have signed up at this point. So we're going to fill the place, and I think it's going to be a great day this Sunday.
So how do these people get selected to be there in the first place?
It's a very grassroots process. Started back in April when every town in Vermont actually has a town caucus where they meet, and each municipality is given a certain number of delegates to the state convention based on how many people turned out in the Democratic primary. So you have a city like Burlington that gets about 76. And I was talking to the chair of Weston today, who gets only two, unfortunately.
And so within that, are there elections of who's going to be selected, or are they people who serve on the state or the town committees?
So anybody who voted in the primary is eligible if they attended one of these town caucuses. And it's amazing. It can even get pretty competitive at the town level. The state convention is going to be a horse of a different color with 117 people running for the district level spots to go down to the national convention in Philadelphia.
You've got 117 people who would like to be, what, one of the 10 delegates who goes to Philadelphia?
One of the 11 district-level delegates. So you could see competition like you've never seen before in this one. I think folks are pretty fired up. You certainly have the hometown favorite with Senator Sanders in the mix here. And we've just seen an unprecedented level of interest. And I think folks are, you know, watching the national news, and they'd like a ringside seat to see how it's all going to go down.
So how does this process work? Tell me, you've got 117 people who are vying for 11 delegate slots. Do you have just one big election and the top 11 win?
Nobody's going to accuse us of not being inclusive in this one, because we're letting every one of the 117 candidates give a brief speech in front of the full convention. So we've asked folks to bring their pajamas. Not really. We hope not to go too long. They will be limited to a 30-second speech, which hopefully allows them to get more than their name out to the full convention. But it is a competitive process. And we've seen pretty involved campaigns for these offices. Emails going out, mailers, phone banks, the whole kin caboodle.
Really?
I can only hope we generate as much interest in our Democratic election in November. But it's a great thing to see, because people who, not necessarily have they been involved in the whole process before, I think we're bringing so many new people into the party. If you look at the numbers alone, from January 1st to town meeting day, I think we've seen about 14,000 new registered voters in the state of Vermont. And a lot of these are younger folks, under the age of 25, but some of them just, haven't been involved before. So we're bringing them in, and, I think it's going to be a great time. We're going to discuss some very big issues, but people are generally excited, and it's a good time to celebrate being Democrats.
Do you think Bernie Sanders is bringing in a lot of those people?
There's no question. When you look at, who's attracted the Senator Sanders campaign here, some folks might be pretty disillusioned with the political process as a whole. And I think, you know, Senator Sanders has taken the bull by the horns and said, I'm running as a Democrat this time. And, you know, the face of the party may be a bit different than it's been in the past with so many new people. But we say the door is open. You know, come on in. And we can have great internal debates on the direction of the future of the Democratic Party. And I hope when the dust settles, we're all on the same page and turn our eyes to November.
Today in the program, we're looking at the workings of the state conventions taking place this weekend. The Republican state convention will be tomorrow in South Burlington. Democrats meeting in Barrie on Sunday. Any questions about how this works? Give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. We just heard Connor Casey talking about some of these folks are actually campaigning to be the delegates to the national convention. They want a chance to be there at the national stage and watch things unfold. Your thoughts about that and the whole superdelegate system that the Democrats employ, 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net. Better yet, give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. All right, so you got 117 people campaigning for 11 slots, and they're all going to spend 30 seconds talking to the convention. That is really quite a feat in itself. So let's get down to the election of these folks. Is it the top 11 in the process, or do the 600 people who are there get to select, you know, choose several people?
Sure. So everybody will be given a ballot, and they will pick 11 people who they believe should represent Vermont as a district-level delegate. It'll alternate. The first vote will go to a woman, and the second a man. So we'll have 6 women and 5 men representing the district-level categories. I should note that there are other categories of pledged delegates who will be casting their first vote for Senator Sanders on June 11th. The 11 district-level delegates who are elected will meet and select 3 at-large delegates. They'll also select 2 PLEO, which is party leader and elected official delegates. And this could be a member of the General Assembly, it could be a justice of the peace, or it could be a town chair.
So let's say these folks are going to have their 30 seconds to convince other people at the convention to vote for them to be a delegate. Does it matter if they support Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders? Is that a factor in the determination?
This is where it might be a bit different from previous conventions in that Senator Sanders was the only candidate who met the 15% threshold in the primary. Anybody who falls below that is not entitled to any pledged delegates at the national convention. So in previous elections, for instance, back in 2008, you would have had different caucuses within the convention. You would have had some caucusing for Obama, some for Hillary, and the vote would be divided as such based on the proportion. In this case, again, Senator Sanders was the only one who met that 15%. So all of the 16 pledged delegates going down to Philadelphia will be casting their first vote for Senator Sanders.
And in the very unlikely event that this goes to a second ballot, are they still pledged to Sanders, or are they open at that point?
They're open at that point.
All right. Let's go to our callers and start off today with Justin, who is calling from Brattleboro. Hey, Justin, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, Justin.
Yeah, I wanted to voice my opinion that I just think that the pledged delegate, the process that the Democratic Committee uses right now, I disagree with it completely. I think it should be solely the will of the voters who we elect for our candidate as Democrats, and I don't really think it's fair. I've never seen so much overwhelming support for somebody like Bernie Sanders, but yet he's losing, and it seems like a large part of his loss is due to this convoluted delegation process.
So, Justin, you're speaking specifically about this super delegate, the non-elected delegates.
Yes, exactly.
So, Connor, a lot of people are speaking out about this process. They see it as being undemocratic. Was it put in place to give some support so that an insurgent candidacy wouldn't take over? I mean, why is it there?
Yeah, sure. So I think it's, you know, evolved over the years, and there were a number of different reasons for it being implemented in the first place. One might be to reflect like the diversity in a state to make sure you're not sending, you know, a bunch of folks who don't represent the state actually to a national convention. I actually heard a story about Speaker of the House Tip O'Neill not being able to get elected in his own town of Cambridge because a librarian kept beating him. And he said, I'm the Speaker of the House. I hope I would deserve a voice in this process. Anyways, you know, the system itself, the rules, it's completely fair to scrutinize this. And I think the state convention, we will see a resolution that addresses it. And the convention is an appropriate time to look. Are we going in the right direction or the wrong direction as far as our delegate selection process? So, you know, one thing I would say is the Vermont Democratic Party is not the DNC. We're a voice for Vermonters, and we're happy to be the messengers. We will have representation on the platform committee and the rules committee, and we'll carry forward the whatever the Vermonters want to see going forward in the 2020 election. You know, certainly we're in the middle of 16 now. The rules have been established. They were established well before any candidates even announced for this race. And I think it's natural in a close race like this to really say, okay, is this fair, to really scrutinize it in a close race? We did pass a resolution at the Democratic State Committee recently enough that questioned unpledged delegates or superdelegates. And I think there will be a robust discussion this Sunday at the convention.
I mean, do you think the superdelegate system supports a candidate who might be viewed as embracing the status quo?
And certainly people have voiced that. Whether or not that's the intent, it could be in the interpretation. I mean, I'll say one thing, Bob. It's, you know, the delegate selection process is pretty complicated. And I personally think it should be changed so that, you know, anybody can understand how it works, and it doesn't take me 10 minutes to explain it to someone. That's always going to open itself to some level of controversy. And I think to the extent we can simplify it is going to bring more people into the fold and hopefully alleviate any suspicions that it's being tilted towards one candidate or another. So I would say, you know, you're going to get debate not only at the state level, but at the national level, and you certainly could see some changes in 2020.
So if you could change the process to make it easier to understand, how would you change it?
Do we need different levels of district-level delegates, at-large delegates, PLEO delegates, you know, unpledged delegates? I think our job should be to make everything more accessible, not harder. And you know, fair enough, these rules were established well ahead of time, so you can't change it mid-game. But we'd like to have the conversation, and we'd like to hear from everybody. So, you know, drop us a line at the headquarters if you have suggestions, or stop by the convention this Sunday if you want to hear some of the debate.
You mentioned that it will come up for a debate in Barrie on Sunday. Do you think it's going to pass?
I think it has a lot of sponsors on it, to be honest. So I think there's a good chance that it does pass. And again, we'll carry the message down to Philadelphia.
You know, I want to get your thoughts about last Saturday. The state convention in Nevada turned out to be a bedlam. And supporters of Senator Sanders felt that they were treated very unfairly, that their motions from the floor were not recognized. And it really turned into a pretty ugly affair. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, having not been in Nevada myself, I don't think I can speak to every bit of it. What I can say is I think it is an isolated incident. And you know what? I'm going to say it. There's jerks who are Democrats. There's jerks who are Republicans. And some of the comments made and directed towards the chair there were completely out of order in Nevada. I think, you know, when we meet this Sunday, you're going to see a very different convention than you would have seen out there. I've been in Vermont politics for a long time, but I've never seen the level of excitement. And I hope it's a celebratory occasion and not divisive in the least. Because we're not caucusing separately, it is going to be largely Senator Sanders supporters at the state convention. And I think you're going to see a level of decorum there that maybe you don't see elsewhere. Passions are flying high, but there's never any excuse to make personal threats or be inappropriate or, you know, worst case, any level of like physical violence like you saw in Nevada. So we're staying clear that our job as a party is, you know, to be neutral as far as what candidate the party supports until after the primary. But we really want to bring people together, you know, not rip them apart. And again, when the dust settles, I hope we have some unity and we're all on the same page. And you know what? I'm pretty confident that that will be the case.
Is another job on Sunday the development of a state platform?
It's not. It's been moved to August. You know, I don't think we anticipated having 117 candidates for these offices to begin with. So the Democratic platform, you know, that's it directs us. It directs everything we do. And if you're an elected official, you know, we hope you're consulting the platform on occasion if you're a Democrat. So we want to have a full day devoted to our platform. I think you saw this last legislative session. Democrats came out for paid sick days in the platform. And that was something that was carried out. So we want to be the voice of policy to some extent as well as just getting folks elected over at the party.
Also on Sunday, I think you're going to hear from, in addition to the 117 people who want to be elected delegates, you're going to hear from some of the statewide candidates. And you've got contested races in the primary for governor. You've got Matt Dunn, Sue Minter, and Peter Galbraith, and three candidates for lieutenant governor, Keisha Rahm, David Zuckerman, Shap Smith. So is this a chance for those candidates to reach out to these 600 people and say, this is why I'm the best candidate?
Bob, I'm losing count of all our primary candidates. We have a good few at this point. But again, I think that's a healthy thing as well. So you'll definitely be hearing not only from our statewide elected officials, leadership in the House and Senate, but also some of our many candidates for the 2016 election. And I think, you know, I just as being ED of the Democratic Party, I think primaries are a good thing. It's given our candidates the opportunity to travel the state, have an exchange of ideas, and also increase their name recognition. You know, chances are we're going against somebody in the general election for the governor's race who has a high degree of name recognition. And we need to build up our base, get people excited ahead of time and hit the ground running, you know, when it comes to the general election.
Let's talk and get a quick call in from Alex in Essex Junction. Hey, Alex, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me. I just have a question for you. What would be wrong with letting the popular vote of just general people decide who becomes president?
That might be a direction to go, Alex. And, yeah, I think when the Rules Committee looks towards the future, that may go in the direction. I will say, out of the 26 delegates, and that's pledge and unpledged going down to Philadelphia, if you look at the representation, it couldn't come closer to reflecting the popular vote in the primary election here out of the 26 of them. So I think if you look at the Vermont delegation anyways, we will be representing the will of the people when we're down at the National Convention in Philadelphia.
Alex, were you thinking about in terms of the selection of delegates at the state level?
I was thinking about in terms of what the delegates are voting on, turning that over to the general population.
Exactly.
So you'd be looking more at like a national popular vote model, which was actually adopted in a resolution at the Vermont legislature. Again, it could be a way to go. I think there's going to be some debate on that. You know, I'm not taking a position on it myself, but I definitely think we need to scrutinize the process. So it's everything's on the table.
Well, here's a look at how the Democrats organize their party convention coming up on Sunday. Connor Casey, Executive Director of the Vermont Democratic Party. Many thanks for being on.
Hey, thanks so much, Bob.
And coming up next, we'll see how the Republicans are organized. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. We just heard how the Democrats are organizing this weekend. Let's turn to the Republicans. With me now, Jeff Bartley, who's the Executive Director of the Vermont Republican Party. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
And we'll mention that the GOP convention will take place tomorrow at the Sheraton Hotel in South Burlington. Jeff, we just heard from the Democrats. They're expecting over 600 people, and they have 117 people who want to be elected as one of their 11 delegates. How do the numbers stack up on the Republican side?
Well, we're definitely, for on our side, we're seeing huge increases of the participation. I mean, our process isn't as confusing as the other side. We have 39 people who are running. We actually had 49 submit petition signatures. So there will be 39 running for 13 delegate positions and 13 alternate positions.
And how does this work? Do they get to speak at the convention and speak for 30 seconds or a minute and make their case to the folks who are there?
They do not. In fact, they submitted a bio. We have a website, vtgopconvention.com, where we post them along with their picture and contact information. They'll be introduced at the convention, but they will not be speaking. We've been promoting that website as a means to really, you know, promote their candidacy. With 39 or over 100 on the Democratic side, that would be a long day of speeches.
You know, it was interesting, Jeff, that Connor Casey, the executive director of the Democratic Party, said some of their folks are actively campaigning for this job. You know, they're doing mailings, they're doing phone banks. How about on the Republican side? Is this pretty competitive?
It is competitive. I've seen some mailings go out. There's been a lot of emails tossed around with endorsements. I know some phone calls. I'm a delegate to the state convention myself, and so I will be eligible to vote for these delegate candidates. And I've been receiving a lot, even from outside groups in Vermont, really interested to see who is elected and serving on the platform or rules committee.
Today in the program, we are looking at the state conventions this weekend. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Jeff, you mentioned you've got a surge of people, renewed interest in folks wanting to take place and take part in the primary. How much of that is Donald Trump supporters?
I think a good portion of it is, and obviously there's a good portion too who may not be Donald Trump's biggest fans. That is a part of it. We have a delegate candidate who is not necessarily a Trump supporter, but he's 17 years old. He's a junior at Colchester High School, and he realized that he had the opportunity to serve. He is a registered voter, so he's running for the position. So, I mean, there's many different reasons why people are getting involved. I think the Trump factor is one of them, but it's certainly not the only.
And talking about the Trump factor, you've got him at the top of the ticket. Do you think it's going to affect statewide races in Vermont? And I ask that because you've got a couple of people, state people, who don't have a very strong impression of Trump. Phil Scott says he's running for governor on the Republican side. Phil Scott says he won't vote for Trump. He's going to write in somebody else's name. Former Governor Jim Douglas has expressed some strong concerns about Donald Trump. And Randy Brock, who's seeking the party's nomination for lieutenant governor, has written, this is a quote, "I've made it clear I will not support a bully, a bigot, and a buffoon for the highest office in the land." And these are Republicans making these comments. So does it start to spill over? Are you concerned that it'll spill over to the statewide races?
No, not really. And this is why, Bob. In the March primary, there were 135,000 Vermont voters that essentially cast a ballot for an anti-establishment candidate. People are fired up on both sides of the aisle. When you look at the 2014 election cycle, there was a huge anti-Democrat year in Vermont. We saw gains. We picked up seats in the House for the first time in 14 years, and we nearly unseated a governor. That's carrying over, and we're reaching out to these voters. We know who these voters are. We're having conversations with them, and we're bringing them into the party. You know, we're all entitled to do what we'd like in the ballot box, but at the end of the day, we're looking forward to focusing on Vermont issues and really harnessing the anti-establishment emotion that's out there right now.
We certainly see that challenge to the status quo taking place across the country, and your feeling is that that's also present in Vermont?
Oh, absolutely. I absolutely believe that. I mean, and I think that the Democrats think that too. I mean, in the House, we have one retirement, and I can't keep track of how many they have in their caucus. I mean, they see what's coming down the pipe. But since 2011, when Vermont Democrats took complete control, we've seen $350 million in budget increases. We passed $47 million in new taxes this year alone. People are fed up, and they're fired up, and they know that if we don't bring balance to Montpelier, we're going to start seeing a carbon tax. We're going to see more increases in property taxes, or Montpelier passing the buck off to local towns and having them collect it with unfunded mandates and so forth.
Jeff, there was an interesting poll that was released this morning that said 8 in 10 Republican voters say their leaders should support Mr. Trump, even if they disagree with him on important issues. Do you think we're going to see some of the Republican leaders now? I'm thinking about Phil Scott, Jim Douglas, and Randy Brock. Do you think we're going to see them at least give Trump a lukewarm support?
You know, again, the race that we're talking about is Vermont. And every time I'm on the show, you ask me these same questions. We are focused on Vermont issues, and we're going to be focusing on the Vermont elections. And we have a great shot at winning the governor's seat. Those are the conversations that we're going to be focused on.
Okay. Now, if we went back to 2014, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you look at the 150 races in the House, I think that there were only Republican candidates, I want to say, in less than 100 races. Does that sound right?
81 seats.
81 seats. So are you anticipating being more competitive this year?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the advantage of picking up seats in 14 is you can start putting resources in other areas because we have more shots that we can take. We are seeing an increased interest in running for office. We got some phenomenal candidates recently. Brian Keefe, for example, announced that he's running in Manchester. These are some parts of the state where we necessarily haven't been too competitive. So we're looking forward to kind of expanding the battlefield, so to speak, where we're going to have some statewide candidates announcing pretty soon. So we're pretty excited.
Can you give us a hint of who those candidates might be?
Well, it wouldn't be a surprise if I told you now.
When you look at some of these legislative races, particularly the House races, do you think they're decided on some of these overarching statewide issues, or are they more determined at the local level and the way that the individual candidates are known and respected within their own communities?
It's a combination of both. That's a good question. I mean, when you see the direction of Montpelier right now, that's going to bleed over into each and every single race across the state. I mean, the property taxes, the carbon tax, I mean, $47 million in new taxes this year alone in fees. So that's a big part of it. But then also, politics is local. We are a very retail politics-centric state. And so it is up to our candidates to bring their message and have conversations and, most importantly, listen to the voters. And that's something we are getting much better at. We did a great job in the last election cycle. It's a little bit of both.
So these Republican candidates, if they don't support the increase in fees and the increase in the budget, do they have a responsibility to their voters to say this is where the budget should be cut?
That's up to each individual candidate. Our job as a political party is to provide the resources for them to be successful in their campaigns. Every candidate is entitled to have their own ideas, and we encourage that. We are a very diverse party. We are a very big tent, and we are getting bigger.
So, Jeff, the Democrats have this system of superdelegates, non-elected delegates, to their convention. The Republicans don't. How come?
That's just not our process. I mean, I think I've done a lot of these interviews in the last couple of weeks, and I still don't understand the Democratic process. We elect our delegates at our state convention, and we have three automatic delegates, which is our chair, who's elected by our state committee, and then our committee woman and committee man, who are elected at the convention, and they serve for 4 years at the RNC. So it's a lot easier to understand and to follow. The planning of this convention has been tough, and I'm glad I don't have the rules that the other side has.
So with all these people coming to South Burlington, what's been your biggest logistical challenge for the convention?
Logistical challenge? That's a good question. We're expecting about 600 or 700 people, so I guess making sure we have enough chairs. We have a dinner that night. We're invited John Tig Tegan, who is the one of the heroes of Benghazi and co-author of 13 Hours, and he's headlining our dinner. And we're expecting 300-350 people there. So when you have a large crowd coming, obviously there's a lot of different things. But when it comes to the rules and the execution of the voting and being transparent, our website has been hugely helpful, vtgopconvention.com. I'm pretty thankful about that. So overall, it's just been a lot of work.
Jeff, you've got a primary contest in the race for governor with Phil Scott and Bruce Lisman. Do you think primary contests are a good thing?
Absolutely. And I don't know why anybody would think not. I mean, it brings the best out of all candidates. And I will say this about our two candidates. We have the best governor candidates running right now. And when I look at the three on the other side, hands down, Republicans have the best shot of moving Vermont in the you know, moving it forward. So, you know, I think the conversations over, I think we got 9 to 10 weeks until the primary are going to be healthy. And at the end of the day, whoever comes out on top, they're going to be much better candidates, and we're looking forward to carrying that forward through November.
And then you wouldn't be surprised if Connor Casey had the exact opposite answer to you when he looked at his three candidates for governor and said any one of them is better than what the Republicans have.
Of course. I would not be surprised at all, but I think the facts speak for themselves.
And what about, you know, people have been surprised to learn that the primary is August 9th. It's early. Some states, though, have primaries in March or May or June. What are your thoughts about an August 9th primary?
You know, personally, I mean, we don't really have a party position. I personally don't see anything wrong with it. You know, having it a little later allows candidates a longer time period to get their message out. But in Vermont, it works because every state is up, or every office is up for re-election every 2 years, with the exception, of course, of the U.S. Senate seats. And so you don't really have a lot of time to get your message out there. And if our primary, let's say, was, you know, town meeting day, essentially candidates that wanted to run would have to announce within weeks after the previous general election to really get their message out there and get their organization together and so forth. So I think it's fine. Moving it up has definitely added different dynamics to it. But our party's adaptable, and so we're running with it.
And I'm wondering, is the state convention the time that the party will put its platform together?
No, we have a separate process, and the platform convention will take place in September.
And who gets to go to that convention? How do you select folks for that?
So it's kind of the same process with the state convention. Every town will send delegates to it. Every county organization will elect or appoint a member to the platform committee, so there's 14, and then the chair, Dave Sunderland, will appoint the remaining 11, and they will draft the platform, and then that will, you know, that convention will take place in September.
All right. The Republican State Convention takes place tomorrow in South Burlington. Jeff Bartley, the executive director of the Vermont Republican Party, many thanks for being on the program today.
Hey, thanks, Bob. I appreciate it.
And coming up next, I'll talk to Neil Goswami of the Vermont Press Bureau about some of the big political news this week. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. It's been quite a week in the Democratic presidential race. On Tuesday night, Senator Bernie Sanders easily won the Oregon primary, and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton won a narrow victory in Kentucky. But these results have been overshadowed by events that took place last weekend at the Democratic State Convention in Nevada. Supporters of Senator Sanders felt that their voices were not being heard on a number of procedural issues, and they argued that the Clinton campaign was being awarded more delegates than they deserved based on the results of the Nevada primary back in February. They vocally expressed their unhappiness with the entire situation, and the convention then turned into bedlam. Sanders says he doesn't condone any acts of violence, but he blamed the Democratic National Committee of running, quote, a rigged election system. So where does all of this leave the Sanders campaign as it works to win the California primary on June 7th? That's one of the questions we'll discuss today with Neil Goswami, who is the bureau chief of the Vermont Press Bureau. Neil, great to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
So, Neil, many people thought it would be the Republican Party that might have trouble unifying its various supporters leading up to the national convention. But it seems like, at least at this point, that the question of party unity might be more of an issue on the Democratic side. What's going on here?
Well, we should first say that the GOP may still yet have its own problem that they're dealing with. But it does appear right now that there's a lot of discord within the Democratic Party. Bernie Sanders remains in the race. He, as you noted, won in Oregon on Tuesday, lost a close one in Kentucky. And it's sort of leading his supporters to believe that he still has a real chance to win the nomination. Now, if you look at the hard numbers, that does not appear to be the case. Secretary Clinton is very close to wrapping up the nomination and getting all the delegates she needs to do so. But there's really been an effort on the part of Sanders' supporters to continue to push his candidacy. And we're starting to see a little bit of some nasty behavior coming out. You mentioned Nevada last weekend, and that was a real problem. Based on the primary results, it was determined that Hillary Clinton would take about 20 delegates and Bernie Sanders would win about 15. But at the county caucus level, the Sanders folks were very organized and they were able to sort of minimize her lead to 18 to 17. But then when it came to the state convention last week, the Sanders people were not as well organized and it went back to a 20 to 15 lead. That was very upsetting to Sanders supporters who thought that they were sort of being played a little bit. And they made a number of motions on the floor. There were a number of voice votes, and the Sanders supporters really thought that the chair of the state party there was not fair in how they handled the matters. And, you know, for good reason, they were upset. And then in the following days, Sanders campaign manager Jeff Weaver seemed to only throw more fuel on the fire by accusing the party of not being fair in a lot of these votes. So, you know, you have a situation where Sanders supporters are very passionate and the campaign is doing very little to sort of spell out really just how narrow the path to the nomination is for him. And they're not doing a very good job of asking folks to tone it down. At the same time, you have a National Democratic Party that does appear to have, at least in some ways, tipped the scales in favor of Hillary Clinton throughout the whole process. So you have these competing sort of factors going on, and the Sanders campaign doesn't seem to understand how nasty some of its supporters are getting or have the ability to control them anymore. And the DNC doesn't seem to realize the impression that they've left with millions and millions of Bernie Sanders supporters and how they've handled the primary so far.
And what you hear from some of the Democratic leaders now is they're very worried about the national convention in July, mm-hmm. that if somehow the Sanders campaign feels even at that point
right.
that they haven't been treated fairly. And right now they say they are not being treated fairly in terms of delegates mm-hmm. to these key
committees
yeah. right? That all of a sudden the Sanders campaign says it may challenge a lot of these rulings on the convention floor.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose there's always a danger of some major disruptions at the national convention in July. But we're told by the Sanders campaign and campaign manager Jeff Weaver that there certainly will be no violence. Perhaps people will challenge different things, but it'll be done in a respectful manner. So we'll have to wait and see. Now, as we go through the final contest on June 7th and voting ends, I think that's when I'll really be looking to see, along with plenty of other people, if there is a shift in tone from Bernie Sanders at that time, if he really does try to start bringing the party together and rallying around Secretary Clinton. It appears, based on the state's left, that she'll probably wrap up the nomination by then when you factor in the so-called superdelegates. So we'll have to wait and see after June 7th whether Bernie Sanders and his campaign can start to bring things together.
You know, it seems like there are a number of national Democrats who want Sanders to tone it down right now. And mm-hmm. he says he's going to wage a very aggressive campaign for the California primary.
Right.
That's on June 7th. Do you think some Democrats are worried that the longer that Sanders stays in this race and continues to hammer Hillary Clinton over a lot of the income inequality issues and her ties to Wall Street, that she starts to get weakened as a candidate?
I think that is a concern of many, many Democrats. Most people aren't saying Bernie needs to drop out of the race right now. They understand that his supporters and he himself would like to have him stay in through the June 7th contest. What they are concerned about is the tone of the campaign. He continues to tout polls showing that he is much better suited to challenge Donald Trump in the fall. He continues to rail against Secretary Clinton on Wall Street and other economic issues where he doesn't believe she's moved far enough to the left. So if he continues to do that after June 7th, I think it becomes a even bigger concern for the party. But I think a lot of folks are willing to give him a little leeway until the voting ends.
You know, Neil, it's been really interesting to see the national news media covering this issue over the last couple of days. Let me just read a couple of comments to you from the national press. This is a headline in the New York Times. Bernie Sanders eyeing convention, willing to harm Hillary Clinton in the home stretch. And from The Hill, Liberal media turns on Sanders after fallout from last weekend's Nevada convention spreads. And how about this from The Atlantic? As the Sanders campaign presses forward, it must carefully consider whether the senator's ambition for a political revolution is a goal best achieved by actively stoking the anger of his supporters and, in a sense, encouraging them to tear it all down. I mean, is that the dilemma facing Bernie Sanders right now?
It really is. And I think for Bernie Sanders, he needs to sort of ask himself what sort of outcome he's hoping to achieve here. We know that his path to the nomination is pretty much over at this point, but he does have the opportunity to influence the Democratic Party platform at the convention, which is why he wants to go through these contests and get as many delegates as possible. But he has to ask himself, what's the cost of doing that, and what are the potential outcomes for the country and the Democratic Party? Now, we know he's never been a Democrat until this year, so perhaps he's viewing his cause as bigger than the party's outcome.
Do you think there's any chance that Bernie Sanders sets up an independent political organization to carry on the issues that he's discussed in this campaign?
I think it's probably likely. We saw it in 2004 when former Governor Howard Dean ran. He set up Democracy for America. President Obama used his organization to create Organizing for America. So there is certainly precedent out there to create a sort of advocacy group to push issues and ideas forward. And it's very clear that Senator Sanders has created an army of supporters that believe in his progressive causes. So if he looks to do that, he'll have plenty of supporters and plenty of donors to move it forward.
Let's look at Vermont politics this week. House Speaker Shap Smith announced that he will be a candidate for the Democratic nomination for lieutenant governor. Are you surprised that he made that decision?
No, not at all. And I'm guessing you and most other reporters aren't either. We've heard the rumors and the whispers throughout the legislative session that he was considering this. And in fact, he did little to sort of tamp those rumors down. He acknowledged to most of us that he was considering it, that he would make his decision after the legislative session. And, you know, I think that there were some elements within the Vermont Democratic Party that were really hoping he would do this, the old party stalwarts who were not fully satisfied with the candidates that were already there. So I don't think it's a surprise. We've been hearing this for months now, beginning as early as January or February, that he was potentially getting back into a race, and this turned out to be lieutenant governor.
Those other two candidates in the Democratic race would be Burlington Representative Keisha Rahm and Chittenden County Senator David Zuckerman. So how does Shap Smith coming into this race, how does it change the dynamics of the race?
Well, certainly with Senator Zuckerman, he also served in the Senate as a progressive. He's very liberal compared to a lot of Democrats here in Vermont. Keisha Rahm has built sort of a liberal progressive following as well in the state house. So, you know, I would think that Shap Smith is looking to be the sort of moderate candidate that can pull from all sides and angles of the Democratic Party and build a coalition that at least finds a plurality in the primary. But he's also more palatable to some of the more moderate and conservative Democrats that were really not sure where they would be going in the LG primary.
Zuckerman, who's been a very strong supporter of Bernie Sanders, put out a press release the day that Shap Smith announced and said, "Welcome to the race. And by the way, how come you haven't been a strong supporter of Bernie Sanders?"
Right.
Is that an issue in this campaign?
You know, I'm not sure it will be. It could be very, you know, a lot of candidates that are running for the legislature and some for even statewide office are going to try and attach themselves to the Bernie Sanders phenomenon. And certainly Senator Zuckerman points out his support and his similar ideas to Senator Sanders as often as possible. Certainly some of the electorate out there will be swayed by that. Others will understand that. You know, when you have a primary at the presidential level, people are going to make different decisions on how to move forward. I don't know that in the LG race that whether or not one supports Senator Sanders or endorsed Senator Sanders is going to be a major factor.
We should also mention that on the Republican side, at this time at least, former Auditor Randy Brock is the only GOP candidate for lieutenant governor. It's going to be fascinating to follow all these stories in the weeks ahead. Neil Goswami, Bureau Chief at the Vermont Press Bureau, many thanks for being on the program today.
My pleasure. Always a good time.
That is Vermont Edition for today. Coming up on Monday, new federal rules mean that millions more workers will be eligible for overtime pay. We'll talk about what it means for Vermont employees and businesses. The change is expected to affect thousands of people in Vermont. Send your questions or comments to Vermont Edition at vpr.net and listen live Monday at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Sungari and Sam Gale Rosen. We had production assistance from Liam Connors. Alex Keefe directed the program, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.